Welcome to the Beeson Podcast, coming to you from Beeson Divinity School on the campus of Samford University. Now your host, Doug Sweeney.
Welcome to the Beeson Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Sweeney, and I'm joined today by my friend Josh Chatreau, who serves as Billy Graham Chair of Evangelism and Cultural Engagement here at Beeson Divinity School. It hasn't been too long since we had Josh on the Beeson Podcast, but we sure are glad to have you back on the podcast today, Josh, and talk about your new children's book.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. I think we introduced you pretty well to our podcast audience last time, but just to kind of warm us up here for our conversation about your new book, remind us, so how'd the Lord get you to Beeson Divinity School?
Well, I was in Raleigh, North Carolina. I was serving as a director for the Center of Public Christianity, and I was serving as a resident theologian at a church there. So I was doing ministry, and my family was happy. We were really happy there serving that way, and really didn't think I would return to kind of theological education. I, in fact, told my wife several years before that, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to stay in the church. The only place I would really ever even consider is Beeson. And I can't imagine them, you know, reaching out to me. And so when this position came open and I got an email from you, Doug, saying, would you prayerfully consider applying? Tracy knew we were in trouble. and we went through a kind of year of, it was almost a year kind of discerning that from when I think we first talked. And of course, the process here at Beeson, and the Lord's brought us here, and we've just had a wonderful first year and a half, not only with colleagues here, but I think it's just the faculty here and then the students that we get to not only teach, but to interact with and do life with here on campus and in our own homes. It's just been a wonderful year and a half.
Well, it's a huge blessing to have you here with us. So why would you have said that to Tracy? You're not an alumnus of Beeson. Why'd you say to her,
yeah,
only if Beeson calls would I consider this? What was it about Beeson
So I'm a Baptist, and I was serving at an Anglican church, and that gives you a little bit of my kind of, I'm convictionally Baptist, but the kind of big tent, kind of Protestant evangelical environment I really love. So I love learning from people of other traditions, of other denominations, and also the philosophy of education here at Beeson and in person, and really getting to know the students, and not only having office hours where they come by and you interact and you know them, you know their spouses, you know their kids. And so it was a vision for theological education, which I just think is so rare. Yeah. And I said, that's the type of place I would want to go kind of do this. In some ways, I was doing a sort of thing like that in the church. And I just didn't, thought Beeson's the only one kind of doing that as a seminary or a divinity school. And so that's why I said that to Tracy. And,
yeah. Wonderful. Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Okay, so your new book is a children's book on Augustine of Hippo.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you in a minute about writing a children's book, but maybe to get us to that point, I should ask you about Augustine of Hippo. I mean, maybe a question down the road should be, why were you crazy enough to believe that a children's book about an early church father was going to work well? I hope and pray it does. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
But why Augustine? What's the big deal about Augustine for you?
Well, because Augustine, you know, changed my life as far as changed how I thought about theology and sin. And so Augustine's been such an important historical figure in my thinking. And my kids have been after me to write a kid's book. And I said, I don't think I have it in me. You know, you guys, my books are different, and I've never written a kid's book. And I don't think that's going to happen. And they said, well, Dad, you can do it. You can do it. We, you know, just got to find kind of the right topic and how to do it. And then I saw this series that was actually going back and looking at certain figures in church history. They had done one on, in this series, they've done one on Bonhoeffer and C.S. Lewis, but mostly 20th century figures, really more modern, late modern figures. And so I have a relationship with a publisher already and just said, have you guys thought about, you know, Augustine, somebody more ancient? And they said, well, we haven't, but we'd like to talk to you more about that. And so that's how this got going. But one of the things about Augustine is in his Confessions, he talks about his childhood in a way that I felt like could really kind of map on to kids. And really all of kind of the Western tradition is in some sense coming out of Augustine. Even if you're not in agreement with Augustine and everything, and I'm not, but even if you're, but he's kind of setting the table for the Western tradition and the types of conversations. So he's such an important figure. And in my own tradition, as a Baptist, a lot of times I mention Augustine and maybe people in my church kind of have a vague kind of idea of who he is, but most parents don't actually know much about Augustine if they're honest. And so I kind of viewed it, and I've kind of been viewing it as the trend years ago was those storybook Jesus Bibles that we've come to really like, and people would joke around and say, you know, it's for the kids, but really it's parents who are relearning the kind of big picture of the Bible and how kind of biblical theology and how things are connected through these children's books. And I kind of thinking about this project in the same way. It's also a way to really introduce, yes, kids, but also parents to who Augustine was.
Yeah, that's great. And who's the publisher of this book?
It's Lifeway or B&H Kids.
Okay. So was this idea of going back to a, you know, 4th, 5th century church father for a children's book a stretch for them? Or they thought, you know, once you brought up the idea, they were on board?
Yeah, they were on board pretty quick.
Nice.
I think it was a little bit different in that you go to Lewis, for instance. I think Lewis was maybe the first. Oh, no, Bonhoeffer was the first in the series, and you have this kind of spy theologian, and you have Lewis, who's got Narnia, and you have these other worlds. But it's also closer to kids, so you don't have to do as much work to kind of make connections with in people's minds. They kind of naturally know the context or have something like Aslan that really kind of holds their imagination. So I think the questions early on for me from the publishers were, what is the hook, or you know, how are kids going to be interested? And but one of the things I said, you know, pretty quick is in Confessions you get these stories of him and kind of a miseducation early on where he's being people who are supposed to know his teachers, the kind of culture around him, they were supposed to be the ones who knew, but they were giving him upside down rules for life. So he's wanting to be popular. He was wanting to fit in. You have this famous, of course, the pear tree, the story of the pear tree, which were just opportunities, not only visually, because this is a, you know, this is a picture book. Visually, I think they immediately saw opportunities that would engage young readers, but also the storyline, especially early on, of him trying to, you know, one of the unique things about Augustine is Augustine was living right before Christendom. And so in Confessions, he has other options. And in fact, even though his mom is a Christian, his dad is a pagan, and he's very quickly exploring different options outside of the church, different philosophies of life, ways to live. And so there's, again, that kind of connection with what kids are facing today in late modernism, with the kind of pluralism, and they're hearing different ways of life and seeing different visions of life.
Sure.
So there's just some connections that I think immediately parents and kids will get.
Yeah. What's the age range you're going for here?
They told me to write it for five-year-olds.
Five-year-olds. All right.
So, so that was a challenge. How do you write? Now, I think they said the range was maybe 4 to 8-year-olds, but they said about a 5-year-old.
That sounds hard to me. So what do you do? If you want to write a book about Augustine, you've just described the reasons why in pretty adult terms.
Yeah.
So you sit down to write a book and you're aiming at 5-year-olds. What's the strategy?
Well, the strategy is to, in a good Augustinian fashion is to be humble and to ask for a lot of advice. So part of this is kind of became a family project. I have an 11-year-old son, you know my kids, an 11-year-old son, and a 16-year-old daughter, Addison and Hudson. And Addison's very creative, and Hudson, he's pretty smart. He's above a 5-year-old for sure. I say Hudson's 11 going on 40, but still just kind of the imagination of kids helped me hear my own kids and then my wife kind of speaking into this. So that was kind of one voice three voices I was listening to in my home. And then also my editor, who she said to me early on, I'm no expert in Augustine, but I know kids. And so she has kids this age, and this is what she does for a living. So really that kind of relationship, and there was give and take, right? Because me as a professor and someone who's wanting to get Augustine is wanting to do things a certain way at times, which might not be the best way always to present it. So I had to kind of listen to Lauren, and she did a good job of guiding me as an editor. But we had some funny conversations, like, could we get more about Augustine's marital life? And and for those of you who don't know much about Augustine had a concubine, and I said, I'm not sure if that's where we want to go. That's the direction
you said
for this one.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know if we want to explain to a 5-year-old what a concubine is. At least we did not do that in the book. So if you're wondering about those sections, if you're a fan of a Confessions, there's some things that I said, you know, that's really probably Augustine 2.0, maybe a little bit later to get in some of those issues.
And so your families, I mean, what was the process? Your families are kind of testing out things that you're writing. Your kids are looking at it.
Well, I think Lauren's kids are a little younger. So Lauren, just as an editor,
on their behalf, she's looking at
knows her kids and knows parents and knows this audience better than I do. So I'm the you know, I guess Augustine subject matter expert, but I know I'm not the kids' subject matter expert. So just listening to a lot of voices. But to be honest with you, Doug, that's all my projects. I let former students, I'll call up a former student and say, will you read this? I try to get advice and get feedback just from a lot of different people when I write. I don't consider myself naturally a good writer. And so for that reason, I like to get a lot of feedback, and then I just work on the manuscript. I think for me, editing is writing. Editing is what makes a book good, not the initial draft. Yeah. And so in some ways it wasn't different from other projects I've written, but what was different is I'm probably, of all the books I know this, I've never written one like this. So I was much more open to that kind of, even more so to more feedback from others.
From what I've seen thus far, it looks like you have a great illustrator who's been helping you with this.
Yes. Yes. And we never met in the process, this kind of behind the scenes. We never met.
All right. She's just following your lead.
That's right.
To depict what she hears you
saying. I'm giving suggestions and ideas. And then as she draws things, they send it to me, and I give feedback, as well as the editors there at B&H.
She's made a cute little hippo, you know, Augustine.
Yeah,
so from hippo.
So one of the things on this book is it's in a series where there's an animal that tells the story. And so with Bonhoeffer, you had a sheepdog. With Lewis, you had an owl, professorial. Mm-hmm. And so we obviously went with a hippo in honor of Augustine of Hippo. And we got to give it a name, and so we thought, what a better name than my son's name. So we have Hudson the Hippo, who's telling the story, and you'll see him throughout the pages.
I think B&H needs to make one of those hippo plush toys.
Yes.
And sell it with the book.
Yes. Well,
it'd be pretty cool if you're aiming at 5-year-olds.
Yeah, we could send that idea to them, or maybe they'll listen to this. And
all right, so are you trying to, with the kids, just introduce them to this really important person who, whether they understand it yet or not, has been shaping the faith that they've inherited? Or in addition to that, is there some kind of main message for the kids, sort of practically spiritual message to the kids that you're trying to convey?
I'm trying to do both. The thing that I kept saying throughout was I wanted, if Augustine read this, I would want him to say, yes, that's the sort of thing I would have done. And so, of course, we kind of have a clue into that through confessions, because as Augustine is telling his story, he really wants to tell a story about God and redemption and the Bible and scriptures and something much bigger than him. And for him to tell his story, to look back on the past, isn't just facts to know, like kind of just know these facts about this person. No, he's telling that story as he tells us why he's writing this, to move people's hearts. He's not only trying to teach and educate, but he wants them to love God more. He wants them to turn from their sin and trust in the living God. And so as I'm writing this, yes, I want to introduce Augustine, but I'm wanting kids and their parents to be moved to see the goodness and beauty of God and to see the ugliness of our sin and to turn away from that. So both of those things are there in the book. I thought I might just read a little bit from the beginning here. This is a couple pages in, but it gives you a sense of what I'm trying to do in the book. I say, Augustine grew up in a time long before big screens, basketballs, or bikes. Yet in some ways, he wasn't much different from you. He went to school, played with his friends, and tried to please his parents. Augustine's mom, Monica, was a Christian, but his dad wasn't. As a young boy, Augustine would go to church with his mom, but like his dad, Augustine would soon begin to search for everlasting love in other places. This was Augustine's big problem. He looked for everlasting love in all the wrong places. He loved God's gifts, things like school, games, and friends, as if they were the most important things. This made his heart restless. In school, Augustine's teachers taught him good things like reading, writing, and math, but they also gave him some upside-down rules. They taught Augustine that people can find everlasting love by being impressive, sounding cool, winning trophies, and being popular. Augustine thought he was winning, but his heart still felt restless. The way his teachers taught him to win only left him tired, confused, and a long way from the love he was searching for. So that's a little bit from the beginning, and it goes through and tells the story about how he was trying on all of these different ways, and they ended up not giving him what they thought, you know, popularity, winning, being the best at things. And it wasn't until he came to the end of those things that he turned to God eventually. Tells the story of Ambrose, who was the preacher he listened to, and it began to say, well, maybe this Jesus thing that my mom had always been telling me about was right. And then has the famous scene, we have the famous scene in the garden where he hears a child's voice saying, take up and read, and he finally converts. But then we tell the story of what he did as a bishop and as a teacher and a pastor in the church, and how influential his writings were all the way through until he's on his deathbed, and he's writing psalms. He has psalms written on the walls. It's a great picture. One of my favorite pictures of the book is him dying, but we have the psalms up there as that he had people write so he could be praying those psalms even in his last hours. So I think a beautiful kind of story of redemption and even faithfulness, even all the way to the end, until he's about to die.
Yeah, that sounds marvelous. There's some kids in my life who need to read this book, so I look forward to buying it for them. Was this a one-off experience for you? You think you might do another kid's book down the road, or it's too early to tell?
It's too early to tell. We'll see how this goes.
Was this traumatic or was it fun?
No, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And it would just have to be the right topic. I feel like what I brought to the table was, hey, I have some ideas about Augustine and how it might really resonate with kids and parents. And so I think that was it was the right fit for a kid's book. But there might be, I mean, one of the, you know, I do apologetics and evangelism, and just a, you know, writing for some different audiences within that, whether it's middle schoolers or high schoolers, and how do we help in the kind of, for me, those types of, as we're facing new challenges in the West, the church needs to be creative, but we need to be creative anchored to the past, anchored to the theology of people like Augustine. And so we need to take an approach which is not just, hey, let's be creative, but be creative by looking back and anchoring what we're doing by reflecting on the past very carefully. And so I think in the kind of literature sometimes written to teens, and sometimes that kind of connection, that deep connection to the past, isn't always there. So I can see some things kind of bubbling out from this and developing from this, and maybe doing some more stuff on Augustine and the heart for maybe some different age ranges in the future.
Nice. So what is the next book project you've told people you would do?
Right now I'm working on a second edition of Apologetics at the Cross with Mark Allen, and hope to be done with that in September of this year, and that'll come out in a year. And then I'm working on I can't decide whether to call it a prequel or a sequel to Telling a Better Story, but it's looking at really the ways of life in the West. Sometimes if you talk to somebody about Christianity, they'll say, I'm not religious, right? But they still have ways of life. We all have to adopt a certain way of life. And what I want to do is look at seven modern ways of life, from the ways we seek control, the way we consume, the way we seek freedom. And I think in some of these ways, they're not all bad. They're not all, I want to say that. You know, just it's good that we have some control. I take medicine when I'm not feeling good. That's exercises some control, and I'm thankful for that. But unhooked from a bigger story or other ways of life, this kind of need for control or our consuming can overtake us, and I think it has in many ways, and it brings with it a certain malaise. And so I want to talk about that, and it's really a book written for, I'm hoping to write it for Christians and non-Christians, because we're all swimming in this thing called culture together, and what I'm hearing is a lot of the anxiety and the malaise that I think these ways of life are creating is actually both in the church and outside the church. So I think the message is similar for both. We need to come back to Jesus. We need to come back to this better way of life, which is found in Christ. So it's really a project that, like Tim Keller used to say, we can evangelize while we edify, and that's what I'm trying to do in this book.
Marvelous. Last question. How can our listeners be praying for Dr. Josh Yetreau?
Yeah. Well, I would ask for prayer as I continue to teach classes at Beeson, that I'd be faithful, and that collectively as a faculty, we would be faithful in doing the very things that I've been talking about, which is mentoring the next generation of leaders. You pray for my family and I as we still kind of get settled in Birmingham, and we plan on being here a long time. But when you have a 16-year-old and an 11-year-old, there's just the normal challenges of being in a new place. So you could pray for us and my leadership and my family.
We will. You have been listening to Dr. Josh Yetreau. He is the Billy Graham Chair of Evangelism and Cultural Engagement here at Beeson Divinity School. He's the author of a new children's book on Augustine of Hippo. What's the title going to be, Josh, so that people can go find it?
Augustine of Hippo, the doubter who became a church father.
Wonderful. And we can buy it when?
I believe the release date is June 4th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Super. We'll look forward to it. We love you, our listeners. We're praying for you. Please pray for us. Please pray for Dr. Yetreau, his family, and his ministry here. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to the Beeson Podcast, coming to you from the campus of Samford University. theme music is by Advent Birmingham. Our announcer is Mark Ginolette. Our engineer is Rob Willis. Our producer is Neil Embry. And our show host is Doug Sweeney. For more episodes and to subscribe, visit beesondivinity.com/podcast. You can also find the Beeson Podcast on iTunes, YouTube, and Spotify.